A week later and we're still talking about Ferguson, talking more than ever. But are we really getting somewhere, or are we just talking at one another instead of with one another? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. This will be a test. Is there any hope that Alaska can be mature enough to use its diversity and actually move ahead? Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255, to join the conversation toll-free, 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talkatalaskapublic.org. Maybe looking at our own stories is the clue. We'll see today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
So the White House has got itself involved in the Ferguson thing. It seems like they can't cut loose of it. There was another meeting at the White House today, and of course yesterday, an announcement by the president that it was time to take a closer look at the providing of military gear to civilian police departments. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, that alone could be quite the show. But this is an opportunity for Alaskans to see whether we can get across what seems to be a bad communication gap, and maybe by telling our own stories is the way to do. Are race issues in Alaska maybe different from those in the suburbs of St. Louis, Missouri? But there were some that would say, well, not all that different. It's kind of a question of maybe it's directed towards Samoans. Maybe it's directed towards Hispanics. Maybe there's so much diversity among the people of Alaska that it's just kind of a different picture here. So it'll be very interesting what people have to say. I am joined by Charles D. Hayes. Charlie's been on the show before. He's an advocate for self-education. He's an author of many books. And he's a proprietor of Autodidactic Press. What is autodidactic anyway, Charlie?
It means self-educated.
Yeah. So he and I both are kind of great believers in reading and self-education, things like that. And that's mostly what we're talking about. But this time, I wanted him to come on because I wanted him to tell his story. And this is a story that you can, I think, approach it however you want. But I guess I'll take you to Dallas.
Yeah, well, Steve, I grew up in the 40s and 50s in Texas and Oklahoma. I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. After the Marine Corps, I spent 4 years as a Dallas police officer. Came up here in the early 70s. But the communities where I grew up were overtly, openly racist. And I grew up internalizing that tradition myself. It was through self-education that I began to figure it out and change and see how wrong I was. And as a result, the transformation in myself before and after was so significant that that's been a big motivation for my writing ever since. On this subject, though, the thing that nobody's talking about that everybody needs to understand is that we have the same brains that we had during hunter-gatherer times. Our brains are bias repositories. Our brains look out for us. That's what they do. I mean, we used to be on the dinner menu for predators. So our brains keep us safe and keep us free from surprise. At a subconscious level, they note everything that's going on, and they keep a really, really good record. So consequently, if you're growing up and you grow up in a community where an ethnic minority is often poor, they don't have good jobs, they're not well represented in media, they often seem to be the focus of big trouble, they're in trouble, then you have a record of that subconsciously that is equivalent to a hard-driving GPS that will nudge you towards that view no matter what you say intellectually. it's senseless to ask people if they're prejudiced because nobody thinks they are.
So, Charlie, have you educated yourself out of your prejudice that you grew up with?
Yes, but it's hard. It's very, very hard. It's not easy at all.
Well, how do you know if you've done it?
Well, there's all sorts of tests that you can take, and you can detect, you know, if it's still there. And I'm not suggesting that there's not some still there. But because I don't know that you can ever truly get away with it, and I mean, get away from it, and I don't know how many means are actually effective. I mean, if you're intellectually so cognizant, if you're so very much aware of it, then I think you can sort of nip it in the bud.
Mm.
And if police departments, if they are not incredibly watchful and cognizant of the fact, police authority will be abused. And that goes back to the brain situation. Police officers, if you put on a badge and a gun, your testosterone will do an uptake. And it will do that because we're primates just like our primate cousins, chimpanzees and gorillas.
I'm here to serve and protect.
Well, yes, but if you put a person in a position of authority with symbolic reinforcement, their testosterone level will go up and they will become more and more assertive. And one of the things about police work that people don't understand is it has a slot machine frequency of adrenaline. There's enough excitement going on that you get sort of hooked on it. For years after I left police work, I longed for that shot of excitement.
Ah.
I used to put myself into strange situations so I'd sort of be behind the eight ball and work in order to get the excitement level back up. And it took me years to figure out what that was. And that's exactly what it was.
That's something different from post-traumatic stress there.
Well, yeah.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard that syndrome before. I don't know if it has a name.
I don't think it does. But I have a blog on Google that's called Primate Passion versus Law and Order.
Uh-huh.
I discuss all this at length in there. And just before I published that, I sent it to a friend of mine who is a chief of police in Texas still today, and he's had 30 years of experience. And he did not take exception to it. I mean,
go ahead. I'm just getting the calls ready.
Okay. But police departments need to even be watchful for the fact that officers may up the level of action just to get the adrenaline flow going.
Whoa. Oh, man. Well, now, let's step back a couple of, five steps and go to the concept of community policing. Community policing is, I think it's kind of, it's demonstrated to be effective. If when the policeman actually gets out of the vehicle and is with the people that they're dealing with, and they acquire more skills, they acquire a feel for the people that they're dealing with.
Yeah, they have to have. I think they have to have a very cordial relationship and a very, highly interactive with all the as many citizens as possible in order to accomplish that.
Well, I know, for instance, a trouble-ridden neighborhood of Mountain View in Anchorage, and I know people of all sorts that live there, and I know there's a whole bunch of good citizens there that are in despair about the high crime rate around them, and they don't, they find dealing with police a little frustrating.
Yeah. Well, it's a very hard job.
Yeah.
And I'm not anti-police whatsoever.
Yeah. The deal of you're short-staffed, and they say, well, we want you to tell us anytime you see anything suspicious. Okay, so you tell them, and then you don't bother to show up, or, you know, you're dealing with a dispatch person, and, you know, it's just, it gets complicated to the point where you get to some lieutenant or some inspector, somebody actually does something.
Right. Well, as difficult as the nature of prejudice is, it's a subconscious sort of a template that pulls us towards what we think is reality, what our subconscious thinks is reality. You have to think about that in terms of police work. If you're working in a minority area, then you're constantly going to reinforce, if you already have a negative prejudice, you're constantly going to reinforce it more and more and more and more until it solidifies like congealed emotional concrete.
Well, and of course, who are you going to be coming across, you know? But a lot of suspects and people that are of suspicious nature in one or another, that's going to get an overdose of that. I see what you mean.
Right.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. But that issue of, to me, is the intuition aspect, you know, that John Haidt talks about, the idea of the elephant that we're all riding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's been on this program, right. Thanks to your recommendation, by the way, Charlie. but that we don't, we just think we're in charge of the elephant, but the elephant's going to go.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but let's start with the calls here. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. I still haven't got Charlie to tell his story as a Dallas police officer, which I will. And David joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David.
Hello, how are you doing? Hey, I'd just like this. This is clearly not just about this incident. It's really about a larger problem that a lot of people have experienced. I think the specific thing that I wanted to talk about was this police officer fired 12 times, and nobody's talking about the fact that, or maybe they are. I haven't heard it, but that he fired several times at fleeing suspects. They had their backs turned to him, and they were running away, and he fired. And I'm just wondering, you know, and what was the crime that was originally perpetrated? Walking in the middle of the street, so it's not a capital offense. And then there was some sort of assault of a police officer, but firing at a fleeing suspect, firing 12 shots. Who, you know, where do those shots go? Apparently, this is in a neighborhood. There could have been collateral damage. I'm interested to see, you know, and maybe different departments have different protocols. But I know that a lot of police departments have they've stopped high-speed chases because of the collateral damage. Firing 12 shots and firing at fleeing suspects. I'm curious as to what the protocols are. I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Okay, David. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And the factual things in the Ferguson situation go on and on, but it was a situation that escalated. And, you know, the shots that were fired later is perhaps a separate matter from earlier shots, but that's, you know, as far as I can go with that right now. Let's go to Kyle, who joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Kyle.
Hey, good morning. Welcome. Thank you for having the show.
I just wanted people to kind of talk it out. I mean, I got no goal here except that, you know, maybe Alaska can be a little bit more mature than some places are, because it sure is polarizing right now, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's part of a larger issue. That larger issue is all the overregulations, and this we're becoming a kind of a police government in every respect, and we're told to be afraid of terrorism and everything else, and so as we increase the police effectiveness with military weapons and those kinds of things is kind of a frightening prospect. We watch Alaska state troopers on television, and some of the things that we see are the police officers stopping maybe a young girl on a rural road because she has a tail light out, and then taking her into the police station and lecturing her on the evils of marijuana because they found that she didn't have insurance, that she just bought a car that day, and now they're arresting her because and she's in tears and it's below zero and things like that. Is that really necessary? And I'm a little bit older and from an earlier generation, and where the police would often take care of these problems on the spot. And I've served on a couple of grand juries, and I've been alarmed that it seems like everything is a felony anymore. And it's just... I know that the issue of race and police is the topic, but it's just over-regulation all around. And the police have become their own culture, and I know that they kind of associate with each other and mix and mingle with each other, but I think this is a real opportunity for the police to be told by the public, which they're supposed to be protecting, they're working for us, to protect us, that we're not the sheep and they're the wolves, or the sheepdog protecting us from the wolves, kind of a mentality that there should be some judgment applied in all these cases. And I think that's the real problem, is we're applying a lot of force and a lot of enforcement to a lot of regulations, and that, I think, is part of the issue. And the other issue with the race is that, again, I think a little bit of training and cultural awareness would benefit the issue. And I'll listen offline myself, too. Thank you.
Kyle, thanks for piling all those thoughts on us here. It is very interesting, and I would direct you to the actual speech that the president made yesterday. It seemed to be a very reasoned approach to this matter, although I'm not a real big fan of police having military gear. I'm not. But clearly there was some thought put into it. I think Attorney General Holder put a lot of thought into it, and I think it's worthwhile looking at the recommendations that they're making, one of which is to have more cameras so that we actually get to see what happens. We have better evidence. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, and the subject is 478-TALK. The subject is, what does Ferguson mean to Alaska? And Charlie Hayes is with us of Autodidactic Press. And Charlie, you did a blog post actually before Ferguson, but it turned out to be applied to it.
Right.
And maybe you can tell us the story now about what happened to you as a Dallas police officer and in Dallas.
Well, I don't know exactly how to characterize it. It's a hard thing to realize that you were a police officer during a time when racism was overtly open, and you were complicit. And the thing about tradition is, if you are following tradition, it's natural to think that that is not racist. I'm totally chagrined about my behavior when I was on the police department. And I thought I was in the right. I thought I was open-minded. And the same situation is true today all over the country. If a person...
Well, did you ever ask yourself, am I being racist? I mean, at that time?
Not really. I just thought I was right, pretty much. If I had those feelings, I don't remember them. Maybe purposely, I don't know, but
Well, I think it takes a lot of guts to. I mean, you say that this incident was extremely important to you. That you something you can't forget that changed the direction of your life, and that's why I want. You know, I don't think it's going to be easier for you to tell the story.
Right. But the sad part about it is there's been a lot of progress since those years for sure, but not nearly enough. And It's because when I started talking here in the beginning about the nature of bias and how deep it is and how emotional it is and how it's not something that you can simply tune off or turn out. I mean, the notion of protect and serve can easily become a cost and oppress if police departments don't pay incredible amount of attention and provide the training and make sure that their officers are not just letting their emotions take over. And there are some departments where that's pretty obvious that that's happening.
Yeah. So what happened in Dallas?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Incidents. I mean, we were incredibly, incredibly busy at times. I mean, on Friday and Saturday nights, we used to call it the knife and gun club. I mean, we would go from one shooting and stabbing to all night long and really poverty-stricken parts of town. we felt like we were in charge. We felt like that it was our territory. And police officers will do that. If they are being held accountable for crime statistics in a particular neighborhood or part, then they assume an amount of authority that infringes on an individual rights, in my opinion.
So you would profile?
Beg your pardon?
You would profile?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And
I don't think it just seems that experience shows you certain profiles.
Well, if you've got...
you can ground truth this quite a bit.
If you got that internalized template that shows you what reality is, then no matter what you say, you're going to become... You actually can become quite articulate at explaining and rationalizing to make the template appear not important, but that's not the case in most cases.
Yeah. So there was an incident, though. There was a riot, right? A race riot in Dallas.
Oh, yes, because, yes, yes. Yes, yes.
Because of some woman in a car.
No. Myself and a partner answered a call at a public swimming pool. And there was a person inside who was accused of sexually assaulting a female in the pool. So my partner and I arrested this individual and were taking him to jail when a crowd formed around us, and it went ballistic. They started turning our car over. They kicked my partner in the groin, and we had squad cars coming from everywhere, and we were in a large project area, and people came out of their apartments by the hundreds, and it just swarmed. It looked like a weather storm. I mean, it just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And a little girl in a car coming through the area, somebody threw a rock and it went through the windshield, hit her and blinded her. I don't know if it was permanent or not, but that was the case. But if you ever witness something like that, you never forget it.
So there you were, and in the middle of it. Why? You were just doing your duty.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But,
well, okay, can you go back and look and think of anything that you might have done that might have kept the situation from...
I don't know how we could have... I don't know in that particular case how we could have done anything different. We were trying to be sort of low-key about the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
It was just sort of the wrong place at the wrong time, I think. Another aspect of this whole subject matter, and there's a psychological aspect of human behavior that fascinates me, called ideological amplification. And that's simply the fact that a group of people that have something in common, like conservatism or liberalism, when they get together, they will go further in the direction that they were headed than they would have on their own. And all these discussions right now around the country and social media and what have you, that's what's happening. People are getting together on this subject, and they're talking. It's sort of a bonding mechanism where the group gets closer, but they get more radical as they do it.
Wow. So ideological amplification.
Amplification, right. Well, you remember back...
Wait, we're watching it happen.
Absolutely.
Wait, it's a whole lot of it's happened in the past week.
Absolutely. You remember on when we were growing up in the 50s on the old westerns where in the background there's a lynch mob starting and the guys start talking and they get worse and worse and finally they hang somebody? Well, it's sort of the same situation today. And people need to back off and think and understand how the psychological nature of bias is something that is so hard that it needs all of our attention and emotion in order to fix. And you have to admit it first. You know, hardly anybody will admit to being prejudiced or being biased. And Gordon Allport, the psychologist, wrote a fantastic book in the 50s. We've known about this stuff for years, about the nature of prejudice. He maintained that not every overblown generalization is a prejudice, but prejudgments are a prejudice only if they're not changeable with new information. And what we're hearing today is not changeable by new information. People get, they become more convinced than ever that they were right instead of learning anything from a discussion, especially when it's their own group and they're heading in the direction, further in the direction that they would have gone on their own.
I don't know how we get out of these echo chambers. I don't know how. I mean, you know, you could put everybody together in a room, I guess, and let them listen to one another and people, it's demonstrated that the opposite of your ideological amplification can also take place.
Well, you
can get people dialogue.
Sometimes it's easier to change a group opinion than it is an individual.
Huh.
Because you have a cascading effect. People will start going along. People will see other people going along and they'll think, oh, and they'll head off in that direction. And once you take a position and defend it, you have some ownership there, so you're apt to maintain it for a while.
Hmm. Let's go. More calls. Denise joins the program from Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Denise.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I was listening in at the very beginning of your guest statements, and it really brought to mind something, an experience that I had, which is not from a policing perspective, but actually from the healthcare industry. And what I observed is that oftentimes, no matter how well-intentioned people are, and even if the population is actually the majority population, the population being served is the majority population, oftentimes people just get lumped together. And I'm really touched by the comment that your guest made about how these biases are so ingrained. It actually is very helpful to me looking back to imagine that some of what I saw as, you know, almost overt racism in my mind may not have been something that people even were aware that they were experiencing or that they were demonstrating. And I just appreciate the comments about how those are so ingrained. And I thank you very much for the perspective. I'll listen offline.
Okay, Denise. Yeah, thank you very much for bringing that up. It puts me in mind of what Chris Rock said, a very powerful statements. He just said, look, this is stuff that white people need to talk to white people about. It's on my side. I know what's going on. Let's go to Renee, joins the program from Esther. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Renee.
Yeah, good morning. In regard to some of the groupthink comments that the officer just made, all of those aspects can be applied equally to the police departments in spades. And I've worked with the police as a mental health practitioner, and there is a good old boy, good old girl club alive there. Community policing currently is one of the themes that's been, you know, harped on for 10 years or so. You know, grow a relationship with the community, there's less opposition. The Kevlar jackboot Car 15 MP5K image runs directly in contradiction to community policing. It's hard to get all warm and fuzzy with a guy who looks like he's a member of the Stasi and is dressed accordingly. Overcharging is one of the current issues that takes place. The legislature, of course, makes this available. The DAs get creative with it. Law enforcement takes part. It's to cut down on the cost of court process to get people to plead out before the fact. But it also becomes a card in play when the cop steps over the line, shoots somebody where there's question as to whether use of force was justified. Well, if we can overcharge them and make them look evil enough, then we can make this minimized, right? Writing arrest reports and so on and making those fit what should have happened rather than what did happen. Meanwhile, perjury, and Alan Dershowitz has done a fair amount of research into this. Law enforcement officers are the ones who, particularly initially on the East Coast, originated with the term testifying to grand juries as well as affidavits and so on, and writing things as they should have been. That's a B felony in Alaska, and when's the last time you saw that prosecuted? I personally know attorneys who have exposed officers on the stand for perjury. I can't think of one of them that lost their badge, and yet these people have the right and ability and authority and power to change your life forever, and when they commit perjury, they're not prosecuted.
Mm.
Part of that same club. Qualified immunity with license to kill fits right into that. Do I want somebody licensed to kill who's basically made a Teflon? No, I don't. Okay, then the current microcassettes versus body cameras, we already have evidence gathering, and I can tell you about cases where when the microcassette would have made the officer guilty of criminal activity, guess what? Well, we've misplaced that. We'll get back to you. Okay.
Rosemary Woods.
Civil liberties versus working to undermine those liberties. these are not necessarily Boy Scouts. And when I hear people say, well, yeah, but most of them are good, just a few bad apples, I ask, when's the last time the good ones filed charges against their corrupt brothers and sisters? Show me a case here in Alaska, more than one anecdote. Because if you're not turning in the criminal cop, you're complicit, and complicity in a felony is a crime.
Renee, thank you very much.
You bet.
1-800-478-8255. You can just hear the emotion in our callers. It's very interesting. Charlie, they don't even want to have dialogue. They just want to say, okay, there's what I have to say.
I don't disagree with anything you said.
Yeah, yeah. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. What do Alaskans think about the Ferguson situation? Well, we're finding out as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
You've heard of Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday. Well, now you're hearing about Giving Tuesday, a day to kick off the season of giving back on Tuesday, December the 2nd. Celebrate the season of giving with Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Community Foundation on Tuesday, December the 2nd by giving a gift to the cause you care about most. When you live and give in Alaska, you make a real difference in your home community.
Well, we got plenty to talk about. What does Ferguson mean to Alaska? And it just seems that everybody's got an opinion, and there's little common ground, and there's very few places where all people can get together and see one another's views. So it's interesting to me to conduct this kind of forum here. And I'm really thankful to Charlie Hayes of Autodidactic Press to be with us and help sort some of these out with his keen intellect. This one from Larry by email says, look, there were in fact no bullet holes in Michael Brown's back. This doesn't prove no shots were fired at him fleeing, but it does have an implication. But almost every citizen quote, advocates, any side, and commentators' observations I've heard show unvoiced assumptions, unsupported exaggerations, and point of view biases. This is not my point, though. What I wonder is, where are the neutral observers? Is the media selecting to publish or air only those quotes that occupy the extremes? Well, I don't really know. It seems in some ways, yeah, we are doing that. We are kind of doing that. But it is, usually there are people in the middle. This one seems to have an absence of people in the middle, Charlie. You notice?
Yeah, I would hesitate to offer an opinion on that officer's guilt or innocence without having seen everything that the grand jury saw.
Oh, yeah. Well, the standard for grand jury is probable cause.
Right.
And you, I don't know about federal, but I know a state grand jury, they don't have to be unanimous or, you know, it's just a majority vote. And there is no cross-examination, but the idea is, should this be a trial or not? And they decided no. And I'm not, it's hard for me. I was amazed to see it all made public. And I'm not passing judgment on what happened in that situation. Having served on grand jury myself, I think it's quite tough. I know we would end each day as a grand jury pretty exhausted.
Right. Well, it's the law that enables an officer to shoot, to kill, based on the notion of being in fear of their life, it's hard to prove that they're not, almost under any circumstances.
Oh, yeah, stand your ground.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's very hard. So.
And to be armed with that.
Right.
You know, that's like kind of the equivalent of being inside an armored vehicle or something like that.
Right.
Well.
There's been a few incidents on television lately, one in the Walmart and the other one when that 12-year-old boy was shot.
Yeah,
and those look to me like the they were totally, totally unnecessary. Both of them. I mean, the supposedly the 12-year-old boy, they told him three times to put up his hands and or something to that effect, and the whole thing happened in 2 seconds. And the Walmart was just horrendous. I mean, that was there was just the young man had a BB gun or something to that effect, and I saw most of the you could see most of the occurrence in the on the film, but that there was just no call for that in my opinion.
Yeah, let's go to it's Damien in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Damien.
Thank you. Well, I've been really enjoying this show. I think you guys are presenting a very balanced view of the whole thing, and that's good. I agree with your guest that I can't determine whether or not the officer is at fault in this case. And I think, you know, part of your earlier point is the reason, which is that a lot of the extreme is getting the attention and not the central and the actual fact-based information. What my thought was is that all of us look at each other and we categorize each other. He's a Republican, he's a Christian, he's a Muslim, and we go through, you know, that person's a female, that person's a male, and we categorize those things. And I think that's kind of damaging in situations like that. Whereas if Wilson was thinking of Michael Brown as somebody's son and somebody's husband and somebody's, you know, friend, rather than, you know, from the beginning, not, I know that once he got into the altercation, his mindset goes into survival mode. But if he was thinking of that person in that way, rather than categorizing him as a criminal, maybe as a black person, however he was categorizing him, he may have been able to, you know, fire three shots enough to take control of the situation and not litter this guy with bullets until he was dead. And I think the categorizations, the nationalities, the color, the, you know, color of your skin, all that kind of stuff is used to dehumanize the other person in so many situations, not just in this Ferguson incident.
Yeah, well, it's part of what Mr. Hayes was saying was that some of this leaping to a judgment intuitively, you know, goes back to, you know, the way that humans evolved, and is actually very important. We wouldn't have survived if we hadn't been able to make these snap judgments. But what do you think, Charlie, about what Damien says about he could have been looking at it a little different?
Well, that's where training and that's where police supervision needs to be totally involved and totally in a supervisory manner to watch what's going on. If they leave those officers alone, if they just let things go, it'll get out of hand. The nature of prejudice being what it is. If you look on social media right now and all these different groups where people have sort of barricaded themselves in a particular point of view, and look at what they say about a particular incident, and you can tell that whether or not what they're talking about, whether they know what they're talking about, true or not, the gist of their comments meet the reality of that internalized experience and that bias that they have. I mean, you know.
And we see it. I mean, yeah. It's just demonstrated.
Yeah. I mean, look at this incident with the lady complaining about the behavior of the president's daughters.
Yeah.
Look at the comments that she said. They're not so much about the daughters as her view, as her biased view. I mean, that's where it comes across.
Let's go to Kenai, and Josh joins the program. Thanks for waiting, Josh. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the show. It's been entertaining so far.
Entertaining. All right.
Yeah, I appreciate all the passion coming from everyone on all sides of this subject. And being someone who's been affected by law enforcement personally, I can say that no situation could benefit more from hindsight than the one in Ferguson. I think a lot of people that say this should happen and that should happen, they have that benefit. You know, we give these police officers discretion and weapons. They are in a dangerous field of work. They put their lives on the line every day. So, you know, without being there, it's really hard to say. I will say this, though, about the way it affects Alaska or maybe our view of it. We don't have the same demographics as they do there.
And exactly, we also, yes.
Right? And yes. We also have a young police force here, which is something I've noticed. As I add years to my life, it seems like the police officers stay the same age. And they're all pretty young. They come here and train. It's a good place to get training. And I know some of the mishaps in Alaska have come just from that lack of training and inexperience. And, you know, on the other subject, the race subject, it's something that still has a lot of passion and a lot of things to be worked out. It's too bad that things like this have to happen to bring us to the table to talk about these things, but I can see that we're going to have a lot of things to work out in the future, and you know, won't happen quickly.
Well, thanks, Josh.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, it's true. We do have a different demographic in this state. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation here in our state with a new administration taking over that is not a partisan administration, an administration that is going to have a huge stress on the Alaska Natives in leadership. It would seem that this might be the point where Alaska would consider embracing its own diversity and moving ahead on that, because there's leverage in diversity. There's strength in diversity if we can find a way of approaching things together. Let's go to Karen, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Karen.
Thank you. You know, on diversity, you know, yeah, we have a different demographic profile up here than in Ferguson, but we have, I mean, in Anchorage alone, 123 different languages being spoken.
Yeah.
We do have diversity, and we have had a longstanding racial problem, you know, between Caucasians, the original Caucasians, and our native population. So we have, you know, yeah, our people look different, but we have the same dynamics up here. And one of the things that I've been noticing, partly because of my own past circumstances, was that the demands, you know, made on our law enforcement officers are pretty extreme. You know, we require some pretty heavy-duty brain processes that are very intricate, like critical thinking, logic, ability to calm ourselves, and the customer, you know, the person that they're trying to decide what to do about. You know, it requires discernment and ability to separate their own beliefs out. And what I noticed, there's a pattern nationally. I've just, you know, I haven't done a true study on this, but like for here in Alaska, the VPSO, State Trooper, Anchorage Police Department, the education requirement is a high school diploma. Now, you know, police officer, law enforcement, that's really high stakes jobs. I mean, like the previous caller said, you know, you can change somebody's life, including, you know, making them dead. And, you know, nurses, doctors, other high stakes jobs, safety engineers, air traffic controllers, you know, they have a minimum of a bachelor degree required. But yet our law enforcement, who require, you know, the same level of intricacy, you know, high school is okay, or GED. And I think there's so much more gained when somebody goes through post-secondary education, has held other jobs, has traveled. I think it increases their awareness and appreciation to a core level about the other person.
Wow.
And so I'd like to see the standards raised.
Wow. And
yeah. I mean, I've been shocked that the level of education is so low. You know, and half my DNA comes from the South, And I noticed my own relatives, you know, they're good old boys. And like, oh, my gosh, it's shocking.
I don't want my cousin becoming a police officer.
Yeah, right. That's hilarious. Exactly. I don't want any of my cousins, right?
Yeah, well, I see what you mean. I never really thought of it that way. I mean, there is, of course, you know, you do gain knowledge through experience. Charlie and I are both big proponents of self-education, but at the same time, you know, as a qualification, you know, the ability to solve problems and you know, critical thinking and everything, I mean, that's a very, very interesting observation, Karen.
Well, temperament is incredibly important too, maybe even more so than education, because a person can be trainable in law enforcement. But if you don't have the temperament for it, you shouldn't do it.
1-800-478-8255 is our telephone number as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
Well, Charles D. Hayes, I want to tell you that I just got an email from Tim who said, hey, please look in your Facebook other folder because I've introduced myself there and he wants to have a dialogue with you. So, cool. Let's go to Matt. Joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Matt.
Hi, Steve. Thank you.
Hi.
And your guest. I had an experience in college. I went to the University of San Francisco in San Francisco, and I used to go down to, which was just a few blocks from, among other places, Haight-Ashbury, but it was also, I used to go and play basketball in the panhandle of Golden Gate Park, and most of the people playing basketball there were black. And one day, as I often did, I ran across the street to beat the traffic, and a cop car came to a four-wheel drift, and three cops jumped out with their guns drawn, saying, "Stop or we'll shoot."
Whoops.
And
did somebody rob a bank? What?
Well, somebody had robbed the liquor store, and the description was a white guy, a young white guy.
Ah, well, there you were, weren't you?
I had the misfortune of running, you know, not too far in front of them, trying to not get hit by the traffic, which, you know, San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, they couldn't be talking to me, but I did stop running. And
that's
they,
good.
And they yelled again, "Stop or we'll shoot." And I thought, well, I'm confused. And something happens when you get a gun pointed at you. You're thinking, your critical thinking kind of gets very primitive. It gets very slowed down. You think there's a gun pointed at me, and that's all you can think about. So, I stopped. The cops came up, and they were pretty rough. They were afraid of me. I was in really good shape. I was young, white. And they put me in handcuffs, but the whole time they were doing this, one of the three held a gun to my temple. You know, and I kept saying over and over again, "Put the gun away, put the gun away, put the gun away." I tried to be reasonable, and that's all I could think of, put the gun away. And I thought to myself, if I turn my head, that guy might react and just pull the trigger, even though I had handcuffs on it. They held me for 3 hours, and then it was, you know, soon obvious that I wasn't the guy that robbed the liquor store, that I had, you know, that didn't work that way, and they let me go. But I thought that something happened there. When you become a suspect, you're the suspect. I think, at least in my experience, that's more important than anything else to the cop, to the officer. They have a suspect. I was running. Therefore, I had to be, you know, only prey run, only food runs, as the Africans say. And it there was something that crossed over there in their mind. It didn't matter what color of skin I was. It mattered that I was the suspect. A week later, they did a similar thing for a different reason to a young black man, held the gun to his head, and he turned his head, and they shot him, and he wasn't the right guy. They killed him. I felt it when I was in that situation. I was very close to death, and I felt that the three cops were very, at least one of them, the guy with the gun, was very close to killing me. It didn't matter what color my skin was. But that, I just wanted to say that.
Matt, that is a remarkable self-analysis there, that situation. Thank you very much for that.
All right, thank you. I don't want to say I'm enjoying the conversation. It's been a national, I know there's race problems in America, but even more so, our police who do a necessary job have got to be more involved in the community. They, as one caller said earlier, they can't be looking like stormtroopers driving through in these armored, semi-armored vehicles and not have these kind of incidents. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Matt from Sitka. David joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David. Thanks for listening, for staying on the line so long.
Thank you. I have a couple points to bring up. First of all, something I've noticed, I'm 66 now, and I've been in Alaska for about 40 years. I grew up down in California. But when we were children, if you saw a police officer, the first thing you felt was safety. And I've realized that's changed, and I've asked numerous of my friends and say, okay, what's the first feeling you get when you see a police officer? And generally people will say fear. I think this comes from the fact that the armament that the officers wear nowadays is very imposing. And of course in Alaska, I don't really blame them, because I've been following the news the last few years. It looks like there's a lot more officers have been shot and killed than there have been people by officers, if you follow what I mean. But also I think it's because of legislators. And I also recall in the old days, if a fellow was hanging out at the bar and driving home, a police officer was stopping, and if he wasn't ridiculous, he'd say, hey, let me get you a cab or something. Nowadays, with legislation, they can't do that. They just automatically have to take you to jail and process you. So there's that. And I think the fact that people do respond to officers nowadays with fear is a sad thing, and it is, in effect, a form of prejudice. The other thing I would want to say is I grew up in California, as I say, in Redwood City, and went to high school there, and I was the only white guy on the basketball team. And believe me, when we played another school that was all black, I didn't have much support. But generally, I got along with my players real well, except at times when at night, say, there was white gangs that wandered around Redwood City and liked to beat up on anybody of any other color. And there would be days I'd walk in the locker room, instead of everybody being friendly with me, they'd shy me away and wouldn't want to talk to me because I was a white guy. I learned that I had to just kind of put myself in their shoes. And so pretty much I grew up not being prejudiced, but as I got older, I started developing prejudice. I tried to confront this and understand it. And it's very difficult not to be racially prejudiced or profiling. A good example would be get on the bus and ride around Anchorage. Different people get on and off the bus, or certain people, types of people hanging around the bus stops and stuff like that. And so it's very difficult. The other fellow with you there saying, you know, how you get rid of prejudice. Well, I think the only thing any of us can do, of course, this doesn't relate to Ferguson, different demographic, but individually we each need to stop and don't judge people by what race or color or anything they are, or if they're a police officer or not, or anything like that. We each have to stop, put ourselves in their shoes. And if the person is a bad person, okay, but it doesn't have anything to do with what color they are or what they do for a living.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting, our caller from Sitka who said, look, you know, this was a different... when I was a suspect, all of a sudden the police officers were different. You know, that's not snapping judgment. That's like there, something has changed there, you know. So he had the ability, and maybe it even saved his life. He had the ability to put himself in the other person's shoes a bit. So I think that's an excellent advice from you over there, David.
Well, thank you. Well, I think it is very important. It's like I say, it's very difficult not to profile.
Yeah.
To profile.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Charlie, anything you want to add to that one?
No. I say, if you're really interested in this subject and police behavior, I encourage you to look for my blog, A Primate Passion Versus Law and Order, on the web. And I would say, you see all these instances on film where a person that maybe is handcuffed, they're laying on the ground, and they're still being hit. Police are still hitting them. That is an absolute sign that they're out of control, because there's no reason to hit somebody whose hands are already cuffed and they're already laying on the ground. That's adrenaline has taken over, and they've lost control of themselves. And then if there's a half a dozen officers there, they start playing off of each other.
Hmm. And how often would a person then question themselves about that later? I mean, you know it's got to leave a mark inside a person.
Well, you would think so. Would sure think so.
Let's go to Russell. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Russell. We're running out of time here.
Hi, thank you. Sorry, I'll try and make this short. I just wanted to point at, I'll kind of bounce off of everything everyone said, but I used to work for the university as a resident advisor, and I lived on campus and worked there for 3 years. And I just wanted to say the University Police Department here, UAA in Anchorage, they have that kind of they don't walk into situations looking for a reason to get someone in trouble. They spend a lot of time talking to students, getting to know them. And when I went to school, I went to elementary school in California, and they did lots of presentations by police officers talking at us. Whereas I realized the university police, they talk with you, and when it comes, when there's a issue or something, they do, they assert themselves, but they don't walk in looking, as someone said, stormtroopers, always looking very authoritative and detached.
Yeah, it's sort of a community policing concept. Also, I don't think they have the armored vehicles and the riot gear and all that sort of thing.
I've only seen regular police cars, and they have like a little buggy that they drive around campus, but definitely no tanks or armored vehicles.
Well, thanks. That was good, Russell, and nice and brief.
Yeah.
I want to thank you very much. And Charles D. Hayes, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. It's been very enjoyable, as always.
Thanks.
Thanks for, your blog again is...
It's the title of it is Primate Passion Versus Law and Order.
Mm-hmm. And all the many books of Autodidactic Press.
Right.
And I look forward to your science fiction sequel when it comes out. Portals was that one.
Yeah.
It's worth reading. What if you could actually see what happened in the past? Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks to BD Trantina. Thanks to Josh Edge and Dave Waldron. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quitline can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.